The dollar is so shitty now that all the drug dealers are dumping the dollar and moving to euros. Very quickly, now think about this. The dollar is shrinking in value. Now, I've seen this myself, that, you know, in the days of the major cartels, they didn't count money, they weighed it. They would make pallets of money that would be one ton of $100 bills, and they would know plus or minus $1,000 how much it was. Well, now, as the euro gets to 130, 134, it's been as high as 136 to the dollar, and it'll go back up there pretty soon. Okay, so if you're compiling drug money, it makes much more sense to smuggle euros than it does dollars, because they even have a 200-euro note now. So the drug trade is moving into euros. Now remember, my early work, those of you who've known me for a long time, the CIA's one of its main jobs was to put channel $600 billion a year in illegal drug profits through the U.S. financial markets. You better believe the collapse is coming here. Everybody's pulling out on this, and Bush and everybody else is helping it. Lawmakers scramble to save bases. Oregon, that's why I'm moving to Oregon. One of many reasons why I'm moving to Oregon. And I will talk about that in the end, because you don't have many military bases here. Okay? And that's good. You know, and my four criteria for surviving peak oil, making a decision where you want to live, is low population density, access to fresh water, arable land, and access to timber. Well, there's also some great places in Minnesota and Montana and Kentucky. The problem is 280 million people can't all move there. You know, but that's where you want to be. But this is going to be a major impact for the U.S. economy. Hundreds of thousands of jobs are going to trickle out of that. Gold and dollar. The price of gold has been suppressed, and I'm going to have some more stories about gold up on my website. Don't be alarmed on a day-to-day basis if you see the dollar looking strong for a week or two. The trend is unavoidable, and that's the map I'm trying to show you right now. Now, here's something critical. We know that peak oil is here. We know that energy supplies are running out. We know that there's, you know, the cheap gasoline is gone. Why is the Senate and the Congress, we are on the biggest expansion of the federal highway program in American history, building new highways. You know why? That's looting the Treasury to give the federal taxpayer dollars back to the political cronies with the construction contracts. There's them damn elephants again, and they're more pissed off than ever. And they're looking for you, the ace up your sleeve. Now, you've all probably followed the Social Security debate. Here's a little thing I bet you didn't know. It's all smoke and mirrors. Bush can change Social Security by executive order. He don't have to get Congress to vote on it. He's making a pretext of going through this. So if you're counting on Social Security for much longer, I would encourage you to recount and rethink the draft. We broke some of the biggest stories on the draft. Those of you who have read FTW, last year, way back last year, a year ago, more, we told you the draft was coming back. It is coming back. But the way they've avoided this, and Stan Goff, if you ever read some great writing in your whole life, Stan Goff is a retired master sergeant from U.S. Army Special Forces, 23 more years in the U.S. military, taught at West Point. This guy writes so beautifully that I have to smoke a cigarette when I read one of his stories. I gotta go, And when he's pissed off, it's even better, okay? And you know, he's a radical, I love the guy. I love him, we're very dear friends. Cops and, you know, green beanies, I call them green beanies, and they love it when I do that, you know. We get along very well. But now we have a backdoor draft in the form of stop loss. Right. Guard and reservists are being held over. Enlistees now, thinking they got a three-year term of enlistment at the pleasure of the president, may now be forced to serve on active military duty until they're 53 years old. Yeah! And guess what? The draft is coming back because Charlie Rangel, Bill Clinton's best buddy, has just reintroduced the draft bill last week. It's coming. And don't think you can flee to Canada. No. This ain't Vietnam, ladies and gentlemen. There's 48 FBI field offices across Canada now, 40 plus. The treaties have all been rewritten. Canada will throw your brothers and sisters or you. How many people in this room are between the ages of 18 and 35? Male or female. You're all draft age eligible. The first years chosen when the bill passes will be 21 and 22, but they'll use them up pretty quick. You want to flee the country? We have smart borders. They're now monitoring who leaves the country. Draft age guys trying to leave the country may not be allowed to leave. No fly list. You think you want to go to... Sure, Canadians are wonderful people. I love them and I tease them and I pick on them. And some of them will risk their lives to hide Americans. I'm absolutely sure of that. But don't trust what the FBI can do, because the U.S. may actually occupy Canada at some point. And we started to research a list of the countries that will not extradite. Problem is, you've got to get into those countries first on a visa. New Guinea won't extradite. Great, you can live with the cannibals and headhunters. New Zealand will not extradite. They have some really tight immigration laws, tourist visas. Switzerland, Russia, we've been trying to compile a list of the countries that will not extradite. But the problem is we live in a new information age where total information awareness and software computers and U.S. Technology infiltrates many, many places. So be prepared. The draft is coming back. Of course, if you're homeless and the economy's collapsed and you haven't eaten in 3 weeks, three hots and a cot might not sound too bad, would it? Okay, climate. More good news. It's my job. Increase in dead zones in the world's oceans. The Sunday Times Britain. Britain faces big chills, ocean current flows. Did you all, you know, you were the big story like about a year and a half ago when the Pentagon leaked a classified report saying, you know, global warming is now so bad that the melting ice cap may cause the collapse of the Gulf Stream because the cold water will push the warm water down, which would plunge Europe into an instant ice age. Right? Well, the Gulf Stream is now already slowing. Beam me up, Scotty. San Francisco, Chronicle again. It's much too late to sweat global warming. Time to prepare for the inevitable effects of our ill-fated future. There is some good news at the end of this, I promise. I promise. Two-thirds of the world's resources have been used up. Okay, China's having a huge economic collapse, but oil drilling will be much easier if we melt the polar ice caps. Are these people out of their minds or what? Yes. Now we have some 50 dead microbiologists all specializing in recombinant DNA, microorganisms, and we broke some of the biggest stories on that. We haven't had a chance to follow it up at FTW. I did not make this chart. Somebody else did, and I got it off the web. I can't even tell you the source, but I'm going to get this whole story up on the web. That's just page one. Since 9/11, 50 world-class microbiologists have died under very mysterious circumstances. I mean, one guy was trapped in between two cars having a traffic accident. That's what the headline said. I mean, really bizarre stuff. And the point is that my critics have accused me of being an advocate of genocide. No. The scientific fact is the planet could carry 2 billion people before oil. It can't carry 2 billion, 6.5 on the way to 9 when the oil runs out. A die-off is inevitable. I do not have a plan for how to deal with overpopulation, which is, to sum up, probably the single biggest issue here. But I guarantee you that Dick Cheney, David Rockefeller, the Queen of England, George Bush, and the financial George Soros, the financial elites of the world, do have a plan, and that's what scares the crap out of me. And I'm convinced that one of the means that they are looking at is gene-spliced, biospecific, gene-specific, man-made biological weapons. AIDS is probably an example, but we see it in SARS, we see it. And these microbiologists all seem to have skills that would be required to develop diseases like that. We've seen the Marburg virus in Angola. We've seen the Crimean-Congo hemorrhagic fever. We've seen SARS. We've seen the bird flu. Well, okay, but fine. What I'm looking at here are these, which may be gene-specific, may be not. West Nile is a good possibility, but they also may be like carriers or agents so that they can introduce the bioweapons in this. I mean, you can easily picture Henry Kissinger sitting back saying, right, the problem is not that there's too little oil. The problem is just that there are too many people.
Oil and grain.
The hemorrhagic fevers, by the way, are best described by doctors who I've spoken to as you just sit back and watch the patient melt in front of your eyes. They start bleeding from everywhere, from their eyes, their nose, their mouth. Pretty soon it's coming out through the skin, and eventually the skin falls off, the organs are exposed, the organs dissolve, and they die. Bird flu, that's coming. Oh, there's them damn elephants again. There's the world blowing up again. China, Chirac accepts defeat on EU vote. Now, you probably followed this, that France just defeated the European Union Constitution, the European Constitution, and Holland did, the Netherlands did, I think today or yesterday. I wouldn't worry about that. Europe will have to unify. Britain will have to join Europe because Britain has no place else to go for energy. It will freeze to death without Russian natural gas, which has to come through Europe. Energy and geography will determine everything, no matter what people think or people want. That's a global perspective, but apply that to your own lives here in Oregon. And I am going to get to some positive stuff. Now, you saw this when you walked in the room, did you not? That is a wonderful photograph produced by the National Geographic Society. I took it from their magazine. They used satellite imagery, and you know, they combined like a couple of months of photographs to get this. This is the world at night. But there is no better visualization of where energy is being used and how much that you can find anywhere. Notice, here's India, here's Pakistan. Isn't that amazing? Here's United States. Here we are, right here. Yeah, you can see the I-5 corridor. You can actually see it. I'm serious. You can see the I-5 corridor, but look at the low population density around here. That's kind of interesting here. Here's South Africa. All right, that's Russia. This is where the end. Look at this all the way across the trench. And this is the Russian oil fields right here. Look at Japan. And China's getting brighter all the time. Australia, Indonesia, down here, Thailand, India. Look at India. That's amazing. Okay, but this also is the metaphor for natural gas consumption, fertilizer consumption, everything else. Now, here's another way to look at peak oil. Another way to look at peak oil is very quickly. Would you rather fall to the sidewalk or to the gutter from the penthouse or from the sidewalk? The people in the dark areas are going to be hurt least by peak oil. There's those elephants again. Now, government wiretaps and searches are up 75%. Proposed that the FBI is now going to have subpoena power where they don't even have to go to a judge. They're just going to write their own subpoenas and take anything they want from your records. They don't even have to show it to anybody for approval. Evidence from torture is now usable in court. Don't we live in a wonderful world? Democrats have been voted out of a Baptist church. Well, there's them elephants again. The most evil statement I have heard: we will never stop craving more, say Huber and Mills, nor should we ever wish to. Energy is what brings light out of dark, civilization out of disorder, prosperity out of poverty. Do you believe this? These are two best-selling authors. We will never stop craving more. Look at the title of their book, The Bottomless Well, The Twilight of Fuel, The Virtue of Waste, and Why We Will Never Run Out of Energy. They're still encouraging people to buy more, spend more, and consume more. So now we're back to Crossing the Rubicon, my book, which is a book about 9/11. It is also a book about peak oil. It is a map. It is a map which has proven to be, sadly to say, deadly accurate. And I owe the accuracy to a great many teachers and friends and activists and supporters. Mark's in the book. I quoted Mark in the book. I quoted lots of people in the book. Everybody know Mark Rabinowitz here? Stand up, Mark. Everybody should go to his website, www.oilempire.us. Got that right this time, didn't I? But Rubicon is a map, and it's a map about peak oil. Get it and study it, because if you get what I describe in there, you'll be able to understand what's happening around you, as well as what I've been able to predict and to show you that what we've been able to predict here. Global race is on to snag oil supplies. Now we get to Crossing the Rubicon. I'm going to take a couple minutes to talk about 9/11 and wrap it up. Everybody, not everybody, a lot of people are saying, Mike's got to talk about 9/11. Mike's got to talk about 9/11. How could Mike say that 9/11 was dead? I haven't said 9/11 is dead. 9/11 burns in every one of our hearts, our consciousnesses, our souls. 9/11 was a crime we must never, ever, ever forget. What's dead is the political chance for us to do anything about 9/11. Get it! and get over it. Shit happens. The 2000 presidential election was stolen. The 2004 presidential election was stolen. We did nothing about that. Nothing. Congress has rolled over on 9/11. There's no hearings pending anymore. There's no court to take 9/11 to. The legal system is completely corrupt. The independent so-called lying piece of junk 9/11 commission has closed its doors. The major media is not paying any attention to 9/11. And don't you dare ask me to be stupid enough to expend my life and my precious energy when there are lives to be saved on the Titanic building life rafts to go and try to make somebody somewhere, possibly somehow, open a case to reinvestigate 9/11. It's over. I wrote a book about 9/11. When I said 9/11 was over and finished, think about the fact that I put 2.5 years into writing this book and more blood, sweat, and tears you can imagine. When I said 9/11 is over, I cut the sales of my own book. Because it's more important for me to tell you the truth and to help you save your lives than to help you engage in wishful thinking and fantasy. Now, what happened on 9/11? In order to prove the crime of premeditated murder, you must prove means, motive, and opportunity. What's the motive for 9/11? Have we made the case? The motive is peak oil. Members of the jury who agree that 9/11, that peak oil was the motive for 9/11, please raise your hand. If you don't believe, we'll get there in a second. The opportunity was clear. War games. Five separate, we found another one since the book was published. Five separate war game exercises on September the 11th, which took available National Guard and Air Force fighter aircraft out of the Northeast Air Defense Sector where all the attacks occurred, moved them to northern Canada and to Alaska. What we've just found also moved them to Iceland and Greenland. So there were not enough fighters, eight only available as far as we can tell, in the entire, from Washington, D.C. up to New York City to respond to four hijacked airliners. They fly in pairs. Another war game exercise, which inserted as many as 22 false radar blips onto FAA radar screens so that the air traffic controllers and Northeast Air Defense Sector Air National Guard personnel couldn't pick out the real hijacks from the war games. Injects. Confirmation through Richard Clark in his book, Against All Enemies, that another war game exercise was underway, Vigilant Warrior. And then I got, because I'm the only guy, one of the only guys who's done any original investigation on September the 11th, I went out and knocked on doors, talked to Air Force officers, generals, and I got a confirmation that Vigilant Warrior was a live fly hijack exercise also occurring during the hijack, which involved an airliner under the control of the United States Air Force, the Pentagon, posing as a hijacked airliner at the same time that the real hijackings occurred. The means, Secret Service is the superordinate agency in the entire United States government in national emergency situations, overriding the military, everything. And Dick Cheney and the Secret Service were in the Presidential Emergency Operations Center, the bunker beneath the White House, while Richard Clark was in the crisis room upstairs. And they had completely separate and redundant command and control systems to override every other radar, radio, and everything else that was operating so that the attacks could take place, so that the planes, which I believe were flown by remote control without pods being attached, could successfully be flown and crashed with some of the 19 hijackers on board, posing as hijackers who'd never had the flight skills to make those maneuvers anyway. They didn't have to. They just had to be on the planes. So that the United States of America had the means, motive, and opportunity to create attacks which gave the government the pretext to invade Afghanistan, Uzbekistan, to move their troops into Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, to seize Afghanistan, Iraq, to sequentially move to control the last remaining oil reserves on the planet. There is a quote that I will read you very quickly. There's a great summation of this on my website. This is the actual confirmation that there was a live-fly hijack drill that I received from Major Don Arias of 1st Air Force at Tyndall Air Force Base. It's in the book. And you can call him up, and no, nobody's denied saying it, but from the official energy policy of the United States of America, in May 2001, the top secret task force chaired by Dick Cheney, who has refused against all constitutional measures to show the American public what he was discussing. I know what he was discussing, and we've discussed part of that in the book. America in the year 2001 faces the most serious energy shortage since the oil embargoes of the 1970s. Estimates indicate that over the next 20 years, U.S. oil consumption will increase by 33%, natural gas consumption by well over 50%, and demand for electricity will rise by 45%. U.S. energy consumption is expected to increase by about 32% by 2020. Between 2000 and 2020, U.S. natural gas demand is projected by the Energy Information Administration to increase by more than 50%. Yet we produce 39% less oil today than we did in 1970, the peak year of production in the U.S., leaving us ever more reliant on foreign suppliers. On our present course, America, 20 years from now, will import nearly 2 of every 3 barrels of oil, a condition of increased dependency on foreign powers that do not always have America's interests at heart. Well, why the hell should they? From a national, now, what went on in those meetings was kept a secret. It became a Supreme Court case. It was fought bitterly. When the first decision came up before the Supreme Court, Dick Cheney took Justice Antonin Scalia duck hunting in Louisiana at taxpayer expense on a Secret Service airplane. Conflict of slight interest. And finally, again, that was just confirmed about, this is just from like a week ago, this is May 11th, okay, less than about 3 weeks ago, Cheney wins the final court ruling. We will never know what they discussed, although in crossing the Rubicon, we did discuss 7 pages of records. They were discussing who had the oil, where the oil fields were, who owned what, whom we had to bribe, who we had to kill, whatever we had to do to get the oil. We have that little glimpse, and I'm, you know, it's clear what they were talking about in there. The 9/11 Commission just tampered oil and covered it up. They even fabricated evidence before the end of their hearings. 9/11 is gone. But you line up over there. I'm going to toss this back. I'm going to have to repeat all the questions?
Briefly.
Okay. All right, try to keep your questions brief, and again, we want to keep this to questions, and everybody might have an opinion. We want to avoid a lot of time-consuming political statement if we can do that, just so that we can answer everybody's questions. Let's start. Go ahead.
I don't need to have a question, but I just wanted to share one of my favorite quotes, which is the mammals did not kill the dinosaurs, which I think is really similar to what you've said. So
yeah.
The dinosaurs died because the environment that they needed changed. The mammals were a new form of life that could have self-regulation, internal environment regulation.
That's absolutely true.
Thank you for your research.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Good point. Yes, sir.
Hi. I've noticed there are a lot of efforts locally to encourage people and give them tools to live without oil.
Right.
You know, when the food no longer shipped to stores on trucks. And I wanted to know, and this might be answered if I went to your links section on your website, which I haven't been to in a while, but are you aware of national and even international efforts that you found really impressive in educating people and giving them the ability to exist
There are no national and international efforts. That's the point of this whole presentation. Everything is coming grassroots. The 4th annual conference on peak oil, from the sponsored by the Association for the Study of Peak Oil, was just held in Lisbon. Unfortunately, I had to miss it because of my father's death. But all they're talking about is the fact of peak oil. There is no national, international effort anywhere to teach people how to live after. That's why we have to do this now. The good news is that the number of sites devoted to post-petroleum living is growing exponentially, and some of them are tremendous. You go enter peak oil in Google or whatever engine you use, or post-petroleum living, and you'll come up with hundreds of sites, and those resources are all very good.
Do you have a favorite site?
No, aside from the wilderness, but I'm going to be moving more in that direction. But no, and the reason why I say no is because there's too many good ones out there. Okay, lifeafterTheOilCrash.com, there's all kinds of those coming up now. And you can search, and we are going to be expanding our focus on that. I'm going to reorganize the company. We've had some very serious sabotage efforts at FTW by the government over the last 6 months. They infiltrated our staff, and they got the either twisted people who had something to hide, or they successfully planted people in. Our whole order system was sabotaged. We had a guy depositing checks, tearing up orders, shipping stuff to wrong locations, and all kinds of things like that. We almost went under just within the last 2 months. But I am going to restructure the site and reorganize FTW to focus more on that, and I'll be bringing you that information as time goes by. Next question, please.
I know that the problems of peak oil look really grave and everything, and that everything looks like it's going to fall apart, and that economic collapses of this order would probably happen at a very quick pace, but do you think it's possible that you're right, but maybe that things might fall apart a little bit more slowly? And if so, what would be the advice that you would give to people about how we would deal with the 9/11 issue, since the mass majority of people, since the media is corporate controlled and they tend to brainwash each other, if you accept that opinion, that the whole system tends to feed a sort of a mass self-hypnotic state where these people who have been so successful think that they're still in a place where everything works, and they can't believe that it would fall apart. What advice would you give the people about the 9/11 events?
Listen, if you're hell bent on if you want to make, I mean, there are people who've made the assassination of John F. Kennedy their life's cause. If you want to do that, then I would encourage you to do that with a view towards putting 9/11 into the context of peak oil, as a means of opening the door to people who are in denial as to why, because one of the most common objections people have to accepting government complicity in 9/11 is, I can't believe my government would do something like that. What would make them do something like that? Well, peak oil did make them do something like that. So that's the way I would pursue it. But, you know, my basic attitude is that my energy is on saving my life now. My energy is not on 9/11. We sold 80-plus thousand copies of Crossing the Rubicon. We're the best-selling book on 9/11 that's ever been out there. But I probably cost myself sales of 100,000 copies of the book by saying 9/11's a dead issue. But it's more important for me to save my life than to sell copies of books. See, and that's the point. You know, 9/11, if you want to pursue it, put it in the context of peak oil. You're never going to get government to take it up, ever. It's not going to happen. It's over. Done. Next.
Hi, Mike. I appreciate your speaking tonight, and I just wanted to ask you a little bit about where the oil is going from Iraq. I know it might be not passing through the Flute and just going out on the sand someplace, but I originally thought that the reason that the U.S. went into Iraq was for oil.
There's still 100 billion barrels of oil in the Iraqi soil.
Okay.
It's oil in the ground. It's oil in the bank. If you were an oil man and you knew that oil was selling for $53 a barrel today, and you knew it was going to be selling for $100 a barrel tomorrow, when would you sell it?
Right, so they're just sitting on it, in other words.
Exactly.
Okay.
You're still my hero.
Thanks.
Still got a question I tried to put out last time I told we spoke on the air. I got probably 5-6 months before I can get the seed bank operational. It's going to take that long to order the seed, to put it back, and to get it assembled. Do we have 5 months? Six months?
Yeah, I think so.
The delivery for seed, if you order now, the fastest you could put a seed bank together is 6 months. It'll take January
start.
Before the orders are going.
Just start. I think you do have time. Now, somebody else had just mentioned, what if the economic collapse doesn't happen? What if the peak oil doesn't hit all at once?
More time to prepare.
There's a whole new term in the lexicon right now that's just surfaced in the last 6 months, which I didn't come up with, called demand destruction. The way to mitigate peak oil is to throw tens of millions of people out of work, because people who are unemployed don't drive cars, don't go on vacations, you know, can't afford to buy
gas. Crash the economy first, and then you don't have to worry about Social Security or anything else.
Well, yeah, but what I'm saying is that we are going to see economic collapse be engineered as a means of mitigating or prolonging this little plateau before we go over the cliff. You understand what I'm saying? You certainly have, I think, 6 months to put a seed bank together. Yes.
Okay.
I think you have a year and a half. But the point is don't wait.
Any of you that hear it in the future, it's called the Cascading Seed Bank, and I'll have something online pretty quick.
Okay. All right. Great.
So you kind of mentioned, or you talked about things around this, but it's this kind of idea of the human locust problem, where you have this vast arid region in the southwest of the state of the United States, which, like, given the consequences of no oil and the agricultural system, like, those people are going to be starving in their...
Speak a little closer to the mic.
All these people starving, wanting to go somewhere where they can grow food, just
right.
Kind of like what you talked about moving here. And how, I think that we need to start talking about that realistically, and that shooting them all as they come onto our land is probably not going to be very sustainable.
There's not enough bullets.
Exactly. And in other places, like in other places around the world where you have these kinds of crises, it's the infrastructure that's in place that is able to absorb these immigrants. And so just discussing about...
It's not just a matter of everybody in Arizona packing up and trying to move to Oregon next week. There will be societal breakdown. I mean, this is happening in the context with economic collapse. This is a complex society. And when things break down, they tend to break down in really bizarre ways all over the map. So you cannot predict. Jeff Goldblum had a great line in Jurassic Park, you know, talking about chaos theory. Okay. The more complex a civilization, the more ways it can break down. We're a hugely complex civilization. The fact is, there's no way to predict with any certainty how things are going to unfold. The problem that I see with most people who accept peak oil is they tend to think like progressives have been taught to think, which is, okay, today we're living in a petroleum society. How do I prepare to live in the post-petroleum society as if you can just make the move? What you're going to miss is the 10 or 15 or 20 or 50 years of transition between the two that will be as bloody as the collapse of the Roman Empire. And we don't know how that's going to play out. We don't know how climate change might occur, or climatological collapse might take place or affect. If the Gulf Stream does, that's another reason why I'd like rather be here, because we're not here. You're not affected by the Gulf Stream, but something else might happen. You can't plan for everything.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I think I'm done.
Okay.
How do you feel about biodiesel as an immediate solution?
Biodiesel is something that should be being developed. It will not sustain current consumption. It is
How about as far as locally is concerned?
Everybody should be doing that right now. That's why I've traveled through 10 countries since 9/11, and every gas station in Germany now offers biodiesel. The Germans are way ahead here. Every gas station in Germany, they have the list of price: premium, mid-grade, unleaded, and biodiesel.
My second question would be, what part of Oregon are you going to move to?
Southern Oregon. I don't want to be too specific, because the last time I told somebody, 10 of my subscribers moved there and bought houses, and I don't want to have to fight people to buy a house there.
Thanks for your time.
I will tell you that the next place where I'm speaking is Ashland, but there's no connection.
About slightly over 5 years ago, I read an article in Earth Island Journal about how one of the biggest consumers on the planet of oil is the American military. So my question is, when the planet runs out of oil, will that finally put an end to American military world domination plans?
No. The American military, being in the service of the ruling elites, will always get the oil. They'll kill billions of people to keep the military supplied with oil.
Okay, well,
sorry.
Thank you.
I once had a great conversation with my dear friend Richard Heinberg. You ought to read his books, The Party's Over and Power Down. I strongly, strongly urge you to get those books. He and I come from completely different disciplines. We're very good friends, and we both see the post-petroleum world devolving into feudal societies where knowledge, wisdom, cultural survival, seed banks, organic farming evolves around monastic or feudal communities where the knowledge protects itself. But I asked him the question. I said, well, okay, the current economic paradigm is doomed, but if they killed 4.5 billion people, how long could they keep things going in the crooked way it's going now? He said, oh, easily another 300, 400, 500 years. So it's much easier for them to kill billions of people to keep the military running. You'll never see a hydrogen-powered F-16 or a solar-powered aircraft carrier. They'll kill the people. The military will always have oil. Yes, sir.
Boy, that's some happy news. Thank you for coming tonight. I really enjoyed your talk, and I enjoy your website. I've met Richard Heinberg a few times, and yes, his work is just wonderful. Couple things. One is you talked about wealthy people offshoring their currency. What currency should we be investing in?
I'm not saying invest in any currency.
Okay.
I'm saying community currencies are good. Alternative currencies are good. The euro is going to get much stronger. It's partially gold-backed. But if there's an economic collapse, the internet goes down, and you're stuck in America with a bunch of euros, they won't do you any good. I'm not recommending that. Okay. I'm not an investment counselor.
Right. The other question I had was this underlying fear that I'm getting from this presentation, and my belief is wanting to create an us and them world as opposed to an us versus them world. And I'm wondering to what extent do you address that in your book or your
talks? You want to create what kind of a world?
An us and them world versus an us versus them. You know, where it's like, well, I'm going to save my neck and to hell with everyone else.
And that's not discussed in the book. And I look at the people here. We've got 8 minutes to answer the remaining questions. So I really want to be fair. I can't give you all the time. But let me say that what I'm advocating right now is an us and them world. I'm saying you start withdrawing from this mess right now. That's what Willits is doing. You start disengaging in every way you possibly can now, so that when that goes down, you're less affected by it. Yes.
I don't know if you know the answer to this, and it might seem trivial, but do you have any idea how petroleum products are being used, as in what percentage is being used for transportation, manufacturing, and agriculture?
Yes. I can't give it all to you off the top of my head. There are such statistics. You can find them. You might check Association for the Study of Peak Oil. They're linked from my website. There's a number of sites that do break that down. I do know that 70% of all transportation is oil, period, and that I think it's something like 40% of all hydrocarbon energy is used to make fertilizer. I mean, there's some really huge number like that.
Yeah, that just recently came to light. Another question is, we recently saw food riots in Argentina. Is it only a matter of time before we see them in the United States?
Yes.
And will they do any good?
No.
Which I doubt.
No, the soil in this country now is little more than a sponge upon which we pour chemicals. Right now, I wouldn't even worry about. There will be food riots first in the inner cities. There's a great film called a DVD called The End of Suburbia, which I really suggest you get. We have it for sale on our website. That addresses that issue. But food is going to be a major problem. I'm going to move as fast as I can because we've got a lot of people, and I'd like to get as many as I can. Yes.
So should I fill my backyard with cordwood? Fill my garage with food? You know, drill a well in my backyard? You know, is that's what the I should be doing?
Well, if you have access to it, it's more important. You'll use cordwood in a season or two, you know, a winter or two. Then what do you do? If you hoard food, that's only going to last you for X amount of time. You have to worry about renewing the food source. And really what should be happening throughout Oregon, wherever people can, is to stop growing anything that gets exported and to focus on local organic farming communities cooperatively feeding their neighborhood.
What about all my investments? I got $300,000 worth of investments, mutual funds.
Well, okay.
Buy $300,000 worth of gold?
The good advice that I would give is half your money should be in precious metals. But if you've got money in the stock market, if it was my money, I'd be out. That's all I can tell you.
Buy land?
Huh?
Buy land?
Not at the peak of the housing bubble.
Well.
You wait for the bubble to collapse. I've got to move down the line here.
I just wanted to comment. I find it interesting the lifeboats that the wealthy are putting together, like these super yachts that can last 5 years completely on their own, self-contained. I kind of think that that's one of their vehicles they're going to use to survive the chaos on land.
They're already planning for this. They're way ahead of us on this.
But my question would be, what are your thoughts on, it seems like Portland is preparing. What are your thoughts on the possibility of all that preparation for naught being for naught because the authorities come in and just take it all away from us?
No, well, that depends. Look, they don't have enough cops to police 280 million people. People get too paranoid and they don't do the math. Most of the U.S. military is overseas. They're shutting down 35 bases. They don't have enough troops to do that. The sheep will turn it in voluntarily. We'll come and take what? Are they going to take your land? Maybe, maybe not. But the point is that you make preparations. The worst thing you can do is nothing. But they don't have enough cops to come lock everybody up. It's like what happened during the L.A. riots. And that was a test case, I believe. Chief Gates of LAPD, who sent you Mark Croker, by the way, just ordered surround South Central and let it burn. Okay, and that is probably what I expect will happen. I expect the company will be divided under FEMA into 10 regions. The CIA has just announced it's moving its domestic operations headquarters to Denver, Colorado. That, I think, is in preparation because Denver is one of 10 regional capitals. So they will probably, I'm seeing this 5-10 years down the road, they will probably activate the 10 FEMA regions, and it'll pretty much be the Wild West because the police powers will be used to protect critical infrastructure only. That's all they have enough to protect. Yes?
Could you just comment? I don't trust corporate media. I don't read the newspaper or watch television, and all of your sources that you showed tonight were from corporate media. So can you just comment on that?
Well, yeah. I've been around corporate media a long time. Corporate media has to tell the truth when they publish a story. Let me finish my answer, please. What they headline is the lie. They distract you with Michael Jackson. They distract you with Desperate Housewives. They distract you with stories that mean nothing. But all the business people that make decisions read these Bloomberg stories and everything else. The fact is, you watch the ABC Nightly News and read the front page of the paper, and that's where you get most of your information from. There is a true science to reading the corporate media, because there's too many businesses and decision makers that rely on that information. That has to be accurate. That's accurate information. They just don't put it in the headlines properly, and they don't give you the perspective on it. That's the lie. We have 4 minutes left, so please make it quick.
So about 3 months ago, I was watching OPB, and the CEO and chairman of ExxonMobil was on, and he said that they don't look 5 years from now. They look at 30 to 40 years from now, and they know what's going on. And the CEO and chairman of ExxonMobil looked in the television, and he said, you have to get your tribes ready. It's only going to be within the village, and you will not drive 5 miles to work by 2008. That's what the CEO and chairman of ExxonMobil said.
I couldn't hear what you said.
The CEO and chairman of ExxonMobil said that by 2008 or so, that there you will not be driving 5 miles to go to work. You will not be going anywhere, and the only oil will be for the military. And that was on OPB by the CEO and chairman of ExxonMobil. And he said that they look 30 years from now. They already know what's going on 30 years ago. My question, I have a family, brand new babies. We're sitting in a house that's owned by a hospital. It's a publicly owned hospital, so they're getting their finances. If this happens tomorrow as they try to liquidate, what do we squat? Are we going, we're renting now, and also I'm owned by Sallie Mae with a student loan of $4,000.
Yeah,
is that going to cripple me?
Well, all of that may cripple you, and that's been engineered for a long, long time to cripple people with debt. There are ways to get out. That's why I recommended the two sources I did, Pinnacle Quest International and Southern Oregon Resource Center. You'll find them on my links page, clearly. There's some education that you need to go through. You're renting now, that's good. Don't buy.
No.
Don't buy at the top of the bubble. That's the worst mistake you could make. What I would say is pay down your debt as much as possible and start acquiring some physical gold. That is going to appreciate in value. That's just going to increase your flexibility.
$5 in gold.
you can buy very small increments of gold.
So I figured probably marijuana, gold, and food, and water.
That's marijuana, food, gold, and water, and bullets. Oh, okay. There is a PQI event here in Portland next week, Saturday, June 11, 2005, from 2 p.m. to 4:30. I don't have time to read the whole thing because I'm cutting off people for questioning. Whoever brought this up to me, I remember.
Raise your hand.
Raise your hand. See that man after the event. Okay. I'm going to risk going over for 5 minutes because I'm just trying to get these fast. Quick, go.
Clyde Lewis, Ground Zero Radio. Thank you, Mike, for coming out. I've had you on my show before. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you. I see your face now. I didn't.
Yeah. The question I have is that in the post-9/11 culture, we are beginning to see that everything's politics, although it needs to be emphasized that the political structure has collapsed and that there are no real partisan politics out there, and that anyone who turns this into a political thing is actually robbing themselves of the opportunity to organize something new. Is there a possibility that we could all organize something that is nonpartisan, no Republican, no Democrat, no Libertarian, something that is up the middle, saying that we need post-oil crash platforms, we need to figure out about fresh water for people, how to get rid of pain, how to take care of health care, and those sorts of things that are more important for the 21st century instead of plugging along in the 13th century like we have been doing with this administration?
There was a political model which is close to this, which you just reminded me of, which was the populist movement of the late 1890s under William Jennings Bryan, that was a grassroots Chautauqua kind of populist movement. And that's kind of what I'm hoping to see happen around the country, to where groups become active. In the Pacific Northwest, they start linking up with other groups in other parts of the country, which eventually becomes a movement. That's the only way I can see it happen.
I'd just like to let everybody know, too, that I'll be speaking July 10th. At a 9/11 group, and that will be happening. You'll be hearing more about that. And I speak at Dante's every Tuesday night at 7:30, and we talk about the very subjects that my group talks about. Thank you all.
Very nice.
I don't want to sound like a total nut amongst the nuts, but I read somewhere that pirates are going to invade the Pacific Northwest. Did I read that on your site?
No, not on my site. You didn't read that. Don't worry about that, darling. That's the least of your worries. Go sit down. Trust me.
Thank you, Mike. I salute you. These are real soldiers. Two questions. Are you familiar with the book The Fall of America by Elijah Muhammad? And how do you feel about the leadership of Louis Farrakhan and the Millions More movement?
Okay. When I went to UCLA, I studied the Black Muslim movement, so I'm vaguely familiar with that. Elijah Muhammad had some truth. I've actually spoken in Black Muslim mosques at the invitation of the Church of Islam, although I found much more spiritual solace and comfort in the autobiography of Malcolm X. And the brotherhood espoused by Malcolm X for all men. But America is going to fall. It is inevitable it's going to fall. Economically, militarily, the whole world wants to see us fall now, and we are doing nothing but begging for it, so it's coming.
And I just wanted to say, self-improvement is the basis to community development, and that's what this boils down to. Tribal organization and linking up.
Okay.
Thank you.
Moving along. Somebody's going to come and get the hook here for a second, but I'm going to move back. Go. Next. Who's next, please?
Okay. Oh, sorry. Of the 19 people or 19 hijackers, I think it was on cable I heard that's like the people that are named in the commission report are like alive. Where can I learn about that or get deeper in it? Because it was like just skimmed over and I didn't.
You want to find out about which of the hijackers is still alive? It's in Crossing the Rubicon. It's fully footnoted. Five of them also are returning at U.S. military installations.
Okay, thank you.
It's all in my book. That's why I put 1,000 footnotes in there for you.
If we're to change the way money works, how would it be working?
Okay, briefly, go to the website of my dear friend Catherine Austin Fitz, www.solari.com. She is a financial Michelangelo. She's a genius. She and I together have made an incredible, we've increased each other's learning curve. Basically, she talks about forming neighborhood stock corporations. If you want to see how it works, before you go to her website, on my website, I have stories about two countries, North Korea and Cuba, both of which lost their oil when the Soviet Union collapsed. North Korea is starving. Cuba, they didn't call it what Fitz calls it, but they formed neighborhood stock corporations. And basically, the value of the ownership in the neighborhood, the stock value only goes up if the quality of living in the neighborhood goes up. And it's a way to make lots of money. Cuba's doing it. The Cuban people are eating without oil. Their food production is increasing. But Fitz describes it in economic terms, and she's being asked to implement these. She's up in Kalispell, Montana, creating the first one up there right now.
Thank you.
Solari.com.
What about going back to using horses?
Okay, quick answer. It takes 5 acres of arable land to support one horse. At the turn of the century, the country was awash in horse shit. New York City, you couldn't walk because, I'm serious, it was a crisis. It was enormous pollution. The population of the United States then was only 110 million people. Now we have 280 million people. You want to go back to horses, you're going to take away all the land that's available for food, and I don't even want to think about how much horse poop there's going to be laying around. Okay? That's it. Portland, I love you.